Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Iowa avenges the loss to LSU. They're going to the Final Four. This is Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle. Coming to you live from the Seaport. Brought to you by Grey Goose. Great call last night. Ryan Rucco joined us yesterday. Go back on the ESPN app, listen to our podcast, and hear Rucco with us and Rebecca Lobo last night on ESPN in what was must-watch television. It felt like everybody you knew on social media last night, which I know is not everybody in the world, I get that, but everybody you know on social media, everybody in and around your life was watching this game last night. It had a Super Bowl-like feeling of, oh, what time are you watching this game? Where are you watching this game? Who are you watching this game with? That's how awesome it was with Iowa's 94-87 victory over LSU, a team they lost to in the finals last year. Caitlin Clark was insane. 41 points, 12 assists, 7 rebounds, tied the record for most three-pointers in a tournament game with 9, was 9 of 20 from behind the arc. That is in no way, shape, or form to diminish anything that the banged-up, injured Angel Reese did. And oh, by the way, with an injury, 17 points and 20 boards in this game. But specifically, guys, what Clark did in that third quarter, 12 points, had 31 through 3, finished with 41. It was must-watch television last night. It lived up to the hype, and Caitlin Clark, it's unreal.
It absolutely lived up to the hype so much so, guys, that I'm sad it's over. I felt that way after the game, that at least at the collegiate level, we're never going to see these two match up again. And they have provided so much greatness and so much entertainment and have been transcendent as far as women's basketball is concerned. And I'm sad that it's over, but that's kind of the duality of sports, right? The sadness and the pain that you get when something's over or it doesn't turn out the way that you like, and the joy you get in watching it in the moment. And I know we talk a lot about Caitlin Clark's greatness. We've talked about it at length this season many different times. But watching her last night, it just was the exclamation point on an amazing season. And she's still got more basketball left to play. But knowing that LSU was going to throw everything they had at her and they still could not stop her, it was just amazing to watch. I said this stat earlier, and it is worth repeating. Caitlin Clark last night, she scored or assisted on 67 of the team's 94 points, which is 71%.
That's it?
71% of the points had her fingerprints on them. And this is going up against a formidable opponent in LSU, and they still could not stop her. I hope that we truly are appreciating the greatness that we're seeing from her in real time.
Yeah, last night was a heavyweight fight, and Caitlin Clark came out on top. I mean, just the back-and-forth nature of it is what made it so compelling. And the storylines, right? Because they had matched up in the national championship game last year. They've been trash-talking the last several seasons. And it seems like every time these two teams meet, there's something on the line. For this instance, it was a trip to the Final Four. So I enjoyed that aspect of it, and then just watching how the game unfolded. I mean, Iowa jumps on LSU 17-9. Kim Mulkey gets a timeout. Then LSU goes on a 22-9 run. Flaje Johnson has the layup right before the buzzer goes off. They end up tied at halftime. Like, this was a back and forth game, and it was a lot of swings in the momentum. But ultimately, that third quarter is when Iowa pulled away, and that's when it became the Caitlin Clark show, because she hit 4 threes in the quarter, but she hit 3 of those in the first 2.5 minutes on her way to scoring or assisting on 18 of the 24 Hawkeye points. And to me, that's when Iowa put themselves in the driver's seat, and it was clear that Caitlin Clark wasn't going to wilt. She wasn't going to relent. She kept the pressure up, and ultimately LSU, they were the ones that folded this time around.
She has changed the game. I mean, she has totally changed the game. The way in which we're all watching it, the way in which everyone is excited to see what happens next with her, the way in which we're discussing it, analyzing it, overanalyzing it, and I mean that in a good way, Caitlin Clark has changed it all. And just from an X's and O's basketball perspective, watching her play in big moments last night, it felt like Steph Curry. Like, the way she is able to shoot with range, get teammates involved, her passing is phenomenal. I know she turned the ball over more last night than she did in previous games, but I was blown away by her passing.
Oh, yeah.
Her court vision is through the roof. She's Steph Curry. That's what she – or Steph Curry's like her, however you want to look at it. But she was unbelievable last night. And now, as a compliment and credit to her, the question has to be asked. Does she need to do more? Does she have to win it all, guys?
Yeah, yeah. I think she's got to win it all. She does. Because that's the only way you're going to validate all of the flashy numbers, right? She's breaking all of these records. I mean, last night she broke the NCAA tournament record for career assists. I mean, she's got the most made three-pointers in Division I basketball history. I mean, just think about, she's got the scoring record in Division I basketball, men's or women's. All of these records that she is, you know, breaking, how she continues to push the bar forward in terms of individual achievement. She needs to have that translate to overall team success. She got close last year. She was in the national championship game. That's the one for all the marbles. But I feel like she's got to get back to and win it this time in order to validate those numbers. If you think about all of the all-time greats that stack up with her resume from an individual standpoint, the Asia Wilsons of the world, Aaliyah Boston, Breonna Stewart, like all of those individual players, they got hardware. Mm-hmm. They got championships. I mean, the Maya Moores of the world, Diana Taurasi, they got championships. She needs to have the individual accolades translate to overall team success. And I get it, the degree of difficulty is harder because she doesn't have nearly the supporting cast that some of the all-time greats have had in the past. But, I mean, there's no excuses for that. They've gotten to this point. She's got to find a way to break through. And it's not as if she's not capable of it, because we saw even in a game last night where everybody in the building knew that she was the one to stop, when LSU's game plan was to figure out how to contain number 22 from Iowa, she was still able to go off for 41 points and drop 12 dimes in there for good measure. We know she's capable of it.
Yes.
We've just got to see her do it in order to put the cherry on top of what has been a Hall of Fame worthy career.
Yeah, both things can be true, right? We can acknowledge that she is one of the greatest that we've ever seen, and that she's been transformational for the game. And while her legacy is set already in so many ways, it is also fair to say that we should hold her to the standard that we hold all the greats to. And unfortunately, we are in a ring-obsessed society where we oftentimes view your measure of greatness based on how many championships you win, particularly in basketball.
Yeah.
And so I am not going to disrespect Caitlin Clark by putting her in a different category, because she is holding herself to that standard. This is a woman that wants to win. She is as fierce of a competitor as they come. And she got so close last year. I am not going to put it past her to get it done again this year, even though she's got some tough opponents along the way. But I think we should hold her to that standard, and we should say that we expect her to win because of her greatness.
CeCe, need your on-field experience when I ask this question here for this. So I understand, and this is with all the respect in the world to the greatest college basketball program in the women's side ever, UConn, that they're going to play next, and the potential of playing Dawn Staley and, oh, by the way, an undefeated South Carolina team if they get there, right? It's with all the respect of that, preface this. Was there ever a time where you felt like the biggest game of your season was not actually the semifinal or final, or just the champion? Like, you won a Super Bowl, but like, it feels like Caitlin Clark and Iowa beating LSU is the biggest game of the season, even though they have UConn and South Carolina next. Like, how hard is it to get up for the next couple when this one was the one we were waiting for all year long?
Yeah, I've been a part of games like that. Now, ironically enough, the Super Bowl run that you're talking about in 2011, the biggest game of our season wasn't a game that we were actually playing in. It was a game in a divisional round between the San Francisco 49ers and the New Orleans Saints. We played both teams in the regular season. We got smoked by the New Orleans Saints down in the Superdome, but it was a situation where we knew we could go out to Santa Clara and beat the San Francisco 49ers. So the 49ers took care of our business the week before by beating the Saints, and we knew by virtue of that happening that we had a clear path to get to and win a Super Bowl.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, so but to your point, it can happen. Like, the biggest game of the season might not be the game where you're competing in the championship. It might be a game in a previous round before that. And it has – I don't know that we can say that last night's game has that type of air to it, just because we know what lies ahead for Iowa. I mean, you mentioned it. You got Paige Beckers in UConn coming up. And then if you're able to get to and win that game –
oh, by
then
the
you
way.
Got to deal with Dawn Staley and the undefeated South Carolina team.
Assuming they beat NC State. Yes. We're not trying to slander NC State there, but I mean, South Carolina has
I love Isaiah James. Let me tell you what's not going to happen. She's not going. They're not going to beat South Carolina.
888-SAY-ESPN.
Spoiler alert, that ain't going to happen, dog.
That's the telephone number to join us here. Does Caitlin Clark need to do more? Are you satisfied after last night's win against LSU? Ryan in Texas watching on ESPN2. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, guys. Enjoying the show. I think there's two people that changed golf, Happy Gilmore and Tiger Woods.
Okay.
And that's what Caitlin Clark is doing with women's basketball. I drove to a conference to get here in time, get checked into a hotel, run across the street to start watching that game last night. And what you said about the WNBA and when they can go last week, Evan, was crazy. But, yeah, I think Tiger Woods, Happy Gilmore changed golf. Caitlin Clark changed women's basketball.
Yeah, that's amazing that you put Happy Gilmore in there, and thanks for the phone call. Yeah, and what he's referring to is Nuno found the ruling, our producer, where I think it's, what, Nuno, is senior or 22 years old, something where they have to be really far away from removed from high school to get there, whereas in the NBA, it's 1 year removed from high school, if I'm not mistaken, at this point. I don't remember the exact ruling, but yeah, I mean, if Juju Watkins of USC, who lost last night, wanted to go pro, she can't. But Caitlin Clark is definitely changing the sport right now. Mark in Ohio watching on ESPN2. What's up, Mark?
Yes, how you doing, guys?
Morning.
I'm kind of puzzled. I hear everybody say that she won't hit her potential. Not her potential, but you know, she's a superstar. And all I hear is that she needs the trophy, the ring. You got to understand, though, that these other people you guys keep saying, they've had some help as far as the team. Caitlin Clark has no help. The rest of her team wouldn't start for any other teams. That's the issue I'm having.
Yeah, and I don't know that that is fair, but I guess the comparison that I would make is, like, in the NFL this year, we're going to talk all year long, I'm sure, about Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and others that haven't won, saying they need to win.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's kind of the comp in some
ways.
We're
going to say that about Jason Tatum. We're going to talk about the Celtics in the NBA, no?
Yes. Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler. Any of these guys that have had success recently, we're probably not there with Minnesota and OKC, but like the compliment to CeCe's guy Ant-Man is, guess what? They make a run this year. Next year, we're going to say, Ant-Man got to win. This is his window. It's a compliment when you put that kind of pressure on an athlete, is it not?
It's a sign of respect that I think you're so great that regardless of circumstances, regardless of opponents, regardless of the talent around you, that you should be able to find a way and get it done. And Caitlin Clark, time and time again, has risen to the occasion. So why would I all of a sudden say that I don't think she can or should get to the national championship game and win it this time?
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll get more of your phone calls in. Does Caitlin Clark need two more, or are you satisfied with this? And it's amazing, the stories that are coming out of the woodwork by way of the callers today of, oh, I had to rush to this hotel to make sure I watch this game, is exactly what you want on a day like today, knowing that the women's game is as successful as it is right now. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and
The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
What a performance by Caitlin Clark. 41, 12 assists, 7 rebounds, 9 of 20 from behind the arc last night. Just ridiculous. And Route 2, a Final Four matchup against UConn, where, I don't know, UConn just made it to their 23rd Final Four. Ho-hum, Paige Beckers was banged up, and the team was banged. All right, they end up in the Final Four. Just typical UConn. You think about this Final Four. We're throwing so much shade to NC State, unfortunately, and we're not trying to. But South Carolina's undefeated. Iowa has the greatest women's player of our lifetime, arguably, in Caitlin Clark. At least the most popular women's player, famous women's player of our lifetime, in Caitlin Clark.
Well, she's all-time leading scorer. So.
Yeah. Right, all-time leading scorer.
That part.
So I think that we could say the greatest.
Yeah, there's
she's
that
She's literally in the history books.
I mean, she... Okay, I don't want to go here.
Oh, Evan.
Like, Diana Taurasi and Shamika Holtzclaw were pretty damn good, too. I mean, there's a
Candace
lot of...
Candace Parker was pretty
good, Candace Parker was pretty damn good. Like, there are a lot of great players in the women's game. Just because you're leading scorer doesn't mean you're the best.
Yeah.
She may be the best, but it's not, like, undebatable, if that's a word.
No, I'm with you on that one.
She's in the conversation.
Yeah, she's in the conversation with those all-time greats by virtue of what she's done. But I guess that's the point, though. She's in that conversation, but there's something that those all-time greats in the women's game have that she doesn't have.
Okay, so if she ends up winning the national championship this year, and on the way to do that, she took down the defending champion and their rival in LSU, UConn, and an undefeated South Carolina.
Ooh.
Is the conversation
greatest season of all time.
Ooh.
Is the conversation over?
Ooh, that's a great point, Smalls. It might be. It might be.
If you go through that murderer's row of opponents
to get your first title.
I'm willing to say that. And the reason what puts it over the top for me is not just the opponents that she would go through, but processing and dealing with the heartbreak that was last year.
Yeah.
Getting to the final game last year and losing to LSU and then exercising those demons on the way to winning the chip in your last season, which you've already let it be known that you're not going to take the extra year that they're giving you for COVID, like that would be impressive. To be able to do that, like that, that puts it, that frames it in a way where I'm ready to say that she would be the greatest of all time.
And that's why I keep, like, for me, I don't know that she needs to do more. I think she's done enough. Like, I think this year is unbelievable. I get what you two are saying about, like, hey, she's got two more wins to go. I was so blown away impressed with her last night in that win against LSU. Like, I'm cool. That's it. Like, I'm good. I understand that I'm not in the majority on that one, but.
But Ev, you just undermined your own argument, though. Like, I don't know if you realize it. You just said, well, yeah, just because she has all of the stats doesn't mean she's the greatest.
Right.
But then you're saying she's already done enough, even if she doesn't get the ring. Like, that's the part of the game that doesn't make sense to me. Like, if you're saying that she's not the greatest just because she has all of the stats, well, I think you need to have the stats translate to the championship before you're ready to say, okay, she's in the conversation or she might be the GOAT. Like, I think,
that's the thing. CC, I guess my argument is more, maybe I don't look at her in the greatest of all time conversation in terms of competitive basketball against the others, like we just mentioned. I look at her more so as changing the game. Like, I don't think it matters what she does in the semifinals and final, or in the Final Four and championship, because everyone last night was going to their television on ESPN to watch Ruko and Lobo call that game, and like, you had to stop what you're doing to go watch. And I have not experienced that personally in my lifetime with women's basketball. I guess there's two separate arguments, right? Has she changed the game, and is she the best ever in the game, right? And for me, she totally changed the game because I'm looking at it in a different way than I ever have. Does that make more sense than what I'm saying here?
I think you could have made the hard stop at looking at it. Like, I think a lot of people haven't checked in to watch women's basketball. And I think we're just at the precipice of the game becoming more mainstream. And I'll acknowledge that Caitlin Clark has played a big role in that, but I'm not going to say that Caitlin Clark is the only reason why the women's game is where it's at right now, because there are some greats that have, you know, recent greats that have been a part of growing the game, not to mention the all-timers like Cheryl Swoops and Cheryl Miller and all of those other ones in the past. I want to acknowledge that they're a big reason why we're seeing what we're seeing on the court now. And as you mentioned, it, Smalls, like, the reason why we're having this generation of girls in the college basketball game that are so dynamic is because they grew up watching the WNBA.
Right.
You know, they had that representation. So I think acknowledging the greats of yesteryear is a big part of why the women's game is in the state it's in right now. And Caitlin Clark might be the face of it because of the style of play, but she is by no means the only reason why the women's game is grown the way it has in recent years.
Jack in Louisiana joins us here on Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. What's up, Jack?
Hey, buddy. You know, she's got a great three-point shot. I'll give her that. But if y'all watch the Gatorade Jam last night, there's some young girls coming out of high school. One made the first six shots, you know, three-point shot. When she throws it up, you know, a lot of times, if you watch her feet real close, she walks a lot. Referees don't call that. Everybody's sucking up to Caitlin Clark. Now, you talk out both sides of your mouth. You say, well, she's done this, she's done that. Well, go back and look. You think they're going to win the national championship? Who beat them last year in the national championship?
Yeah, the team they just beat last night. Yeah, but Jack, like, and thank you for the phone call. Like, they beat the team last night that they lost to in the championship. And if you're going to call today and critique her because you think she's traveling, give me a break. Give me a break.
Has he watched an NBA game lately?
Oh, my God. You know, I'm glad you said that, CC. I'm glad you said that because I didn't want to do this, but all right, here we go. And you guys know I love the NBA. It's unbelievable the amount of nonstop action in the women's basketball game where when I watch the NBA, there are lulls, and I love the NBA. But last night I'm watching for the entire game. There is not 1 second of downtime. And they all play the entire game, the stars. It's phenomenal watching them. Oh, give me a break. They're traveling.
Yeah,
give me
a break. And here's the thing. Carmelo Anthony said on a recent podcast that the women play the game the right way. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to, like, if you are a true basketball purist, if
no
you're
doubt.
A hooper, if it's about, like, watching them be fundamentally sound and execute at the highest of level and just see the overall skill be at such a high level, like Carmelo Anthony said it, like, the women's game is where it's at. Like that's the state of affairs when it comes to the differences stylistically that we see from the men's game to the women's game. So to sit here and critique Caitlin Clark and say, oh, well, she's traveling, she's doing, man, Caitlin Clark is a baller, man. There's nothing, you can't take anything away from what she's done. Again, the only part that's missing to her resume is the championship. And I hope that she gets it because she is one of the greatest that we've seen of all time in women's college basketball. I hope that she gets that validation for her individual statistics because you're always going to have the naysayers out there that say all she does is shoot these flashy three-pointers. And it seems like there's so much more substance to her game.
No doubt.
That is – boy, I'm going to try to stay calm here. Those who say what you just said, CeCe, like in reference to the previous caller, all she does is shoot threes – watch her play. She uses the ball fake to get to the basket. She's a phenomenal distributor of the ball. She's an excellent passer. You're 1,000% right about the women's game. The ball movement, the cutting, the constant action is beautiful to watch. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
I like it, Smalls. Well done. Yes.
Thank you.
Get the free internet at La Quinta. Watch us. Oh, God, it's so annoying when hotels have the paid to charge for internet.
Oh,
thank you,
worst.
La Quinta. La Quinta is going to give you that free Wi-Fi when you stay there. We are on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. So we are less than a month away from the NFL draft, a draft that CC will be calling on ESPN Radio.
Hello.
And a location in Detroit that we will all be at doing our shows on Thursday and Friday of the draft week. Looking forward to that. And as we get ready for the draft, Hembo from Greeny, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time, had an interesting tweet at Paul Hembo. Tweeted, the most attractive landing spot for a rookie QB by far is Minnesota. Head coach Kevin O'Connell, offensive coordinator Wes Phillips, wide receiver one Justin Jefferson, wide receiver two Jordan Addison, left tackle Christian Darrisaw, right tackle Brian O'Neill. All of the players, the four of them, are 28 years of age and younger. And oh, by the way, they have TJ Hockenson, a tight end, as well. Every pillar in place. We have said that Chicago has felt like the best location for a rookie QB. CC, you have kind of also alluded to and said that Minnesota could be there or better. So where are we going? Best location right now for a rookie quarterback. Best destination, I should say.
I get where Hembo is coming from. The one thing that I would push back on with Minnesota is the state of affairs when it comes to their defense. Like, that's the one thing that I want to see a little bit more improvement on. Now, they got a pretty good defensive coordinator in Brian Flores, mm-hmm. so you'd hope that that continues to trend in that direction. I love Jonathan Grenard, the addition, the free agent pass rusher that they bought in from Houston. I also like Andrew Van Ginkle, so hopefully they'd be able to offset the losses that they had on their defensive front, Danielle Hunter being the biggest of them all. But I want to see how that defense comes into shape, how they round into form before I'm going to say that that's the best landing spot, because I still lean toward the Chicago Bears, and it's because of what I saw in the second half from them defensively. Like, Matt Eberflus, once he got Montez Sweat, turned that defense mm-hmm. into one of the best in all of football. Like, they in the second half of the season, I want to say after week 10, they were the best defense in terms of points per game in all of football. Like, they were one of the top defenses in terms of takeaways in all of football. So I think that can be a quarterback's best friend, a defense that can create field position, that can create extra possessions, and that won't allow opposing offenses to turn games into shootouts, which could expose your quarterback when you have to be a volume passer to stay in a game. So that's the one concern I have about the Minnesota Vikings and what they're putting together. Personnel on the offensive side of the ball looks great for a young quarterback, but I also acknowledge that there is another phase of this that's critically important, and that's what we see on the defensive side of the ball.
Absolutely. The Chicago Bears certainly have the edge when it comes to the defense, while Minnesota, I would say, has the edge when it comes to offensive weapons. Do you guys think there's anything to taking just the personnel off to the side for a second? The fact that it would be better for a top prospect to land in Minnesota because the pressure is less as well? Because whoever goes to Chicago, number one overall pick, the Bears have been desperate for a franchise quarterback for so long. You walk in there and it's an immediate pressurized situation. You're immediately expected to be the savior when you walk into the Chicago Bears. Where while Minnesota certainly has questions at the quarterback position, I think you get more of a runway, more of a grace period. If you're the quarterback that gets drafted to Minnesota, you get more time to develop, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to be Kirk Cousins or better. And Kirk Cousins in what, 6 years in Minnesota has won one playoff game? So that's what that's the bar to clear. Whereas with the Chicago Bears, you got to save the franchise. People are looking at you to be the best quarterback since Sid Luckman. So yeah, there is absolutely something to what you're saying in terms of the pressure that a young quarterback would have to face stepping into that situation.
You have to be CJ Stroud or better. Right?
Yeah.
At least that, like the baseline, I think, based on the fact that they could have drafted him last year and they didn't.
Two follow-ups on this, guys. Are we ranking these two, the two NFC North teams, Chicago and Minnesota, 1 and 2? Or would we like to insert Washington, New England, Denver, the Raiders? Are we inserting any of those teams that we think could be quarterback needy in the draft this year ahead of Minnesota and Chicago in whatever order you'd have them in?
No, okay. Those are the top two.
All right, second part of this. Is there any team out there that doesn't know that they need a quarterback, but if they drafted one, would be a great situation for a quarterback? What do I mean by that? Mm-hmm. The Rams, the Dolphins, the Jets.
Oh, good one.
Right?
The Jets.
So there are maybe really good situations for a rookie quarterback, but a rookie quarterback may not be drafted into them.
Yeah,
right.
I think the Jets is an obvious one. Like, they don't know they need a quarterback, but they do. They do. I mean, they're all in pot committed to Aaron Rodgers, but they shouldn't be. And I don't think that quarterback, if they were to draft one with a top 10 pick, is going to save Rob Saleh or Joe Douglas's job, so they won't. But if you're Woody Johnson and you're taking a macro view of your program, then drafting a quarterback is absolutely what you should and could do. Aaron Rodgers be damned. And so I think that would be the team that I would highlight at the top of this year's draft that should probably be in the quarterback market. That won't be.
But so then let's play that out. So they have the 10th pick. CeCe, you have been pretty clear that you think that there is a much bigger separation between the top three and four, which A.J. McCarthy, than most would say, right? You have him more with Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr., and I believe you have Penix Jr. above him, if I'm not mistaken. Right. So then at 10, let's do it either or. If all of a sudden the Jets sit there at 10 and they draft Penix Jr. or J.J. McCarthy, you would come in the next day and say, boy, they had a heck of a draft. And everybody would probably be critiquing him, and you would say that's exactly what they should do, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just look at what the Jets have done this offseason. Look at their team. Tell me where the question mark for the Jets lies. It's the head coach and the quarterback.
The name of the team. Well, there's that.
There's that, but I'm just talking about from a talent standpoint. It's the head coach and the quarterback.
Offensive coordinator, too.
Quarterback. Yeah, quarterback. Offensive coordinator. Okay, cool. So, but that's the question mark that you have for the Jets. They eliminated the question marks on the offensive line. They eliminated the question marks in the receiver corps. They don't have any question marks on the defensive side of the ball. Where are the questions? The questions around number eight, the quarterback, and all of the baggage that comes with them, including offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. So, yeah, that's why they should be in the quarterback business. But they won't be. I'm acknowledging they won't do it, but they should. They should consider drafting a quarterback because Aaron Rodgers is going into his age 40 season coming off of an Achilles injury, and there's no guarantee that he's going to be more healthy moving forward.
It's interesting because when asking the question, is Minnesota the best landing spot for a rookie quarterback, I think on the surface we always go to the place of the place without the quarterback that is the obvious starter. Sometimes we got to look a little deeper on that, and that teams that may have a quarterback – that could be in a prove it year or could be towards the end, like CeCe's saying with the Jets, may have the best landing spot for a rookie quarterback because it also means they don't have to play right away if they're not ready to play right away. Like, how many are you sold, guys, that the top three quarterbacks, Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, whatever order it would be, are ready to play day one? Like, they're ready to start game one of the season? All three of them?
No. But I never am, or I typically am not, when it comes to rookie quarterbacks. I think most of them could use time to sit, to really ingratiate themselves in the organization, learn the scheme, get comfortable before they get thrown out there. Now, that's not going to happen, but I think a lot of these guys could benefit from sitting for a little bit.
And then there's C.J. Stroud.
And then there's C.J. Stroud.
And then there's Andrew Luck.
Yes. Well, and especially C.J. Stroud and the immediacy of it, because we have recency bias. Everyone is going to expect those three quarterbacks, if they do go 1, 2, 3 off the board, to be able to turn out a C.J. Stroud-like season. And in reality, most of them are going to have a Bryce Young-type season where they go to a situation that isn't necessarily great. It might not be as hyper-dysfunctional as Carolina was, but we know that the stats are out there that it's a coin flip with these quarterbacks, especially in their rookie year.
You're just hoping that the career doesn't get knocked out of them early on, right?
Correct.
Like, you're hoping that it doesn't result in a David Carr-like situation or Justin Fields or Zach Wilson. I mean, or you name it, any of these quarterbacks that have been thrust into action a little too prematurely. Like, that's what happens. Their confidence gets shaken. That's something that they never get back. They don't necessarily trust themselves, and they can't play up to what the physical ability should allow them to do. That's what you get concerned about with playing a guy before he's ready. And I say this a lot about quarterbacking. It's less about the physical attributes and more about the mental acuity, the intangibles, the 6 inches between their ears. Like that is where quarterbacks in the NFL are made or broken from the neck up. And you just wonder how playing a guy prematurely can be to their detriment in terms of being able to fully realize their potential.
So if Chicago is better, quickly, guys, if Chicago is better than Minnesota in terms of an opening, would you take the Jets over Minnesota? I'm sorry, Jets over Chicago? Best opening for a quarterback, for a rookie quarterback? Best landing spot for a rookie quarterback?
I guess the other thing that you have to consider when debating those two spots is the stability at the head coaching spot. Kevin O'Connell ain't going nowhere. I don't know that that's going to be the case with Matt Eberflus. So that might be what gives Minnesota the edge there.
Or Rob Saleh.
Like, I might, that might be what gives them the edge. I will say this, though, man. if you're a rookie quarterback and you got that defense from the New York Jets backing you up, I mean, that's a pretty good spot to be in. You got Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams to throw the ball to, those two avatars. You got Breece Hall, 1,500 yards from scrimmage guy from a year ago. You got all of that. I mean, not to mention a rebuilt offensive line. I mean, the Jets would be ideal for a rookie quarterback in terms of landing spot. I know that the Jets aren't going to do it. I know they're not going to do it, but they should do it. They absolutely should. That would be the perfect landing spot for one of these young quarterbacks.
And you could have them learn behind Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know if I want them learning too much from Rodgers, but that's just me.
From a football perspective, yeah, how about that?
I'm over it next.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Each and every day at this time, our producer, Pat Costello, at PatCostello20 on Twitter. If you want to continue to blame him for things that he has nothing to do with, I see people tweeting at us blaming Pat for things that he literally has nothing to do with, which is wonderful. Love it. Pat gives us items.
What did I get blamed for?
There was something that happened on the TV side. I don't know what, but that people are blaming you for. It's great. It is great. Anyway, great. Pat every single day gives us items that he's over. What's today? What are today's items, Pat?
I would like to fix the NFL in the following way. Let's eliminate kicking entirely. Just get rid of all kicking. No more. Get rid of it. There's no point. It doesn't matter. We're doing all these things to bend over backwards to keep kicking in the game. Just get rid of field goals. Whoever scores the most touchdowns wins the game. That's it. That's football, right? That's all we need. We don't need kicking. Also, 6 points is dumb. Let's just make it one. Why do we have six? I don't get it. I've never understood it.
Make it one, like a touchdown counts as 1 point with no extra point?
Yeah, because that's what it is. We're just counting up by six instead of one for no reason. Just make it one. And get rid of kicking.
It sounds less exciting.
Yeah.
How is that less? It's the same thing. It's just one instead of six.
I don't know. There's been some really tense moments, obviously, in NFL history where a kick could win you the game. And I wouldn't want to eliminate that.
Yeah, I don't want to eliminate that aspect of being able to score once you get into plus territory and it not be a touchdown. The other thing I'm curious, though, Pat, how are you workshopping teams punting the football? How does that work?
We can keep punting. Just get rid of kicking.
Okay, so you're down to keep some actual kicking in the form of punting. You just don't want kicking in the way of field goals and extra points.
We're doing all this to change how we're doing kicking, to keep kickoffs, which are stupid anyway.
Here's the crazy thing.
Now we have to change onside kicks. Why?
This might be a hot take. Here's the thing I'm on. I actually like what the UFL is doing with the extra points. Mm-hmm. Like you get 1 point from the 2 yard line, you get 2 points from the five, and you've got 3 points from the 10 yard line. I actually like that. I think that's more intriguing than an actual extra point. I don't know, call me crazy, but I actually think that's a little more fun to be able to do it that way. It's got that air of the college overtime rules where both teams have to go for two.
Which I love.
Once you get to the third overtime. I actually like that. So it makes it a little more intriguing doing that instead of the mundane extra point. Just because you moved it back from the 2.5 yard line to the 15 yard line doesn't make it more exciting for me or whatever it is. Like it's an extra point. Like it's still so routine and so mundane. I think actually making teams run a play to determine whether or not they'll get 1 point, 2 points, or 3 points after they score a touchdown is fascinating.
When Pat first said this, I thought he meant punting too. And as a Belichick guy, I almost fainted because you got to have punting. But I think he actually may be onto something on the kicking.
Yeah.
If you just take, CeCe, if you take what you just said as, I mean, the 1 point's crazy. That's not going to happen. But touchdown, 6 points. Then they go into what you just said. And kickoff is basically everybody gets the ball at the 25-yard line, let's just say. It's that is and no field goals, meaning you have to go for it on a fourth down and plus territory. Or you don't have to. You could punt it. I mean, there is something to that. That's not crazy.
No, I feel like you got to still be able to kick a field goal because you might be down. I feel like you still should be able to kick a field goal to win.
Yeah, but
the game.
Not in your 1-2-3 or one. What was it? 1-2-3 in the UFL? You said?
Yeah.
1 point, 2 points.
I'm talking about kicking a field goal, not an extra point, a field goal. So once you get into plus territory, being able to kick a field goal, mm-hmm. I actually think you should have that option.
It's a wasted roster spot then if that's all they're doing then. So you may have to adjust that.
No,
part
it's not.
Of it.
If that's all they're doing, knowing how critical that could be in the game, that's not a wasted roster spot.
Eliminated.
Listen, the field goal kicker is the leading scorer on every team. What are you talking about? How is it a wasted roster spot?
And you don't think that's an issue? Like, it's not a problem that the kickers are the most leading scorers in the NFL history? Like, that's goofy.
I think he may be onto something.
I don't know, man.
Get rid of it.
Like, I mean, if you got fourth down from the opponent's 40-yard line, you're in plus territory, but it's fourth and 10. Like, I just, like, you shouldn't have to go for it. You should be able to have the option of kicking a field goal.
Punt. Next one, Pat.
You want to see punt from the plus 40? You want to see that punting? Come on, man.
Canty, happened? You hate punters and kickers and all that stuff.
I don't think they're football players, but, I mean, I still understand why you need them in the game. Come on, man.
Next one, Pat.
Melatonin's terrible.
What?
It stinks. I mean, it's great, but it stinks. It helps me sleep, but it gave me really weird dreams. And as someone who already has really weird dreams, I don't need help. I'm great at it all by myself. Thanks, melatonin. I'm going to keep taking it, though.
What were the dreams?
What were the dreams?
It was like my brain was having a tug of war between like having a nightmare and having a normal dream, and it wasn't sure which one to do. So I was just like at my parents' house, and everything was really creepy, but then people would just like talk to me like it was a normal conversation, but it felt weird. Does that make sense?
No.
And I've never experienced
it. I'm just trying to figure out what made it creepy being at your folks' house and everybody talking.
Wait, hold on. In the dream, you're at your parents' house?
Yeah.
And people are talking to you, which felt normal, but there was an undertone of creepy?
Everything was creepy. Like, I walked up to my sister who was facing the wrong direction, and I was like, oh, no, this is not a good thing. And then I tapped her. I was like, what's going on? And she just turned around. She was like, oh, I'm studying for a test. This is in the dream. And I'm like, this is bizarre. It was like the middle of the night. It was like midnight. And I was like,
how do you know to blame
so
melatonin,
weird.
Though? Like, how do you know to associate blame with melatonin on that?
Because I had taken it.
But, well, Smalls, you take it, right? That doesn't mean it's bad dreams.
No, I think that this says more about what's going on inside Pat's brain. Because the dreams that I remember, I'm like on a boat in Italy with an Aperol Spritz living my best life.
Wow.
I dream about vacation a lot.
We know. Stop saying that's a dream. CeCe and I know that that's the reality over the summer. Yeah. We know small summer. The summer of smalls, we know it.
Yeah, I mean,
we know it.
With Andy Cohen and all the other Bravo celebrities that
I'll
are
come up
friends.
On a boat somewhere. But yeah, Pat, I think you need to do some internal work on why your dreams seem to be so bizarre and creepy.
No, Nuno just pulled it up. And Nuno, read that.
So some individuals may experience vivid dreams or nightmares with melatonin.
Boom.
Yeah.
Melatonin.
Yeah, it definitely takes my dreams to another level.
Really?
Yeah, it does.
What are you dreaming about?
Oh, it's all good stuff. And it's deep sleep, too. I mean, deep sleep.
That's why I love it. Because I have a problem where I wake up a lot in the middle of the night. Not when I take melatonin, I'm out.
No doubt about it.
You know what the weirdest part is? I had like a dream that felt like it was about 8 days long. And I woke up and it had been 45 minutes.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, that feels like it's not supposed to happen with this.
On the melatonin?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I was like, I thought that this was supposed to make me sleep all the time and not just for 45 minutes.
I had a dream last week that I was still playing in the NFL and I was playing for the Las Vegas Raiders.
Ooh. That sounds like a nightmare.
That sounds fun.
Well, I mean, playing where my former teammate is the head coach now.
And in Vegas?
And in Vegas?
Yeah, please.
I mean, I'm just saying, no state income tax? Come on now. That is the dream.
Fun post-game parties.
Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah, even when we lose, we still win it.
That's right.
Just saying.
Pat- Pat's still going to take the melatonin after all of this, which is really remarkable through all of this that, hey, it's providing me problems and I'm going to still take it. Shefty joins us next on Sportsmanlike.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan, Canty, and Michelle.